Welcome to the EDUCAUSE podcast. If you'd like to find more sessions, interviews, and story podcasts, visit our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. This podcast features a program session from the EDUCAUSE 2010 Annual Conference.
I'd like to get started by saying, first of all, that there's no such thing as a bad plan. Okay, my favorite saying is that if you fail to plan, then you plan to fail. So you need to start somewhere, and if you at least have a basic planning process, you can continuously improve it. And I'm going to talk about that theme over and over again, so I hope I don't repeat it too much. But my key point here is that don't worry if your process starts out weak. It will get better over time if you focus on it. So if we start with planning strategically, to plan strategically is to think about the whole plan, not just the strategic plan. Unfortunately, too many planning exercises start and end with the development of just a strategic plan. So no thought is given to the execution or the creation of a context that's fertile and receptive to a strategic vision. And so what I mean by that is, how do you get it done? Right? It's nice to have a strategy, but how do you actually get things done? So there are some key questions you need to answer before embarking on the voyage. How does a planning process apply to all planning, not just long-term strategic planning? What happens after the strategic planning process is complete? And more importantly, what needs to happen before the strategic planning starts? So let me talk a little bit about boundaries. Planning creates change in a measurable way, in a controllable way, and in a way that you can communicate to your client community. So change doesn't come from new technology. It's not about the technology, it's about client needs. So the iPhone, for example, isn't a success because of the technology. There's lots of clones out there now. It's because Apple's put a whole process together. They have the marketing, they have the iTunes software, they have a number of other pieces, they have Steve Jobs turtlenecks. But they have a whole system. Right? And system, if you go look at the Latin definition of the word, is a set of interacting or interdependent objects forming an integrated whole. So we need to broaden our thinking about technology, and you need to plan to integrate all of the components into a true system. So you want to plan holistically for a system. At the University of Victoria, we're not called the IT department, and that's really important to me. We're called University Systems, and that's the title of the department. Why we do that is we say we bring people, process, and organization and technology together. So it's a systems thinking that helps us recognize how everything depends on everything else, and we apply that thinking and our methods to planning. When I got to the University of Victoria, it was about 5 years ago, and we had a strategic IT plan that had been written a decade ago. So it was getting a little old. Now, the good news was that the University of Victoria had a strategic plan, but it was time for it. So the university had a plan, but the IT group or the information systems group did not have a plan. So it was time for a refresh. It was important for us to develop a process to keep the plan fresh and to link planning with execution. When you embark on something like this, the first thing you typically do is say, well, let's bring in some consultants to help us. I had a little bit of a concern with bringing in consultants. Not that they're bad, but I have two issues with them in a situation like this. First of all, the number of consultants in the universe is roughly equal to the number of strategic planning methodologies in the universe. So, simple math. And the other was, contrary to views of all consultants, complexity does not equal value. We wanted to have a very simple process, and it turned out to just be the Deming model. Nothing fancy, nothing rocket science. Plan, do, act, and fix. And we decided to use internal staff and also to use the business school faculty who had experience in strategic planning to help us. So we had something that was process-oriented with a built-in feedback loop, and it was university-developed. So it was written by people who had skin in the game. So are we there yet? If you don't know where you're going, then any road will get you there. Classic example is the family vacation. We used to have to drive 8 hours to visit the grandparents, and we have three kids. And you know, as the trip progressed, the kids would inevitably say, are we there yet? And that gets kind of frustrating. And one time we were taking the trip, and we were 10 minutes into the trip, and the kids started saying, are we there yet? That got a little upsetting. And I said to them, you know what? We're already here. And we proceeded to explain to them how the journey itself had value. And I think that's very important when you apply that to strategic planning, that it's the journey of planning and implementing that is of value. And I have a quote from my favorite strategic planner. Plans are nothing. Planning is everything. Dwight Eisenhower. Eisenhower's idea was that planning is a process. It's not the plan itself, but it's the way you plan and the evolution and the process of planning that's more important than the plan. So it needs to be repeatable and continuously improvable. If you have a process, you can compare, you can measure, and you can improve. So you want to focus on developing a planning process, not just a plan. One of the things we face in the university environment is that change is constant. And that's a critical reason for focusing on the process. You want to be able to adapt to change. Although universities seem very stagnant, continuous change, I think, is the norm for what we face. We have new students every term. They come with favorite websites. Every cohort has its own new set of favorite websites, new cell phones. And they have new little surprises for our network in terms of viruses. We get requests for new technology every minute. We get vendors coming up with new technology. We have researchers who have needs for new facilities. There's new pedagogical ideas. So we have a faculty who have new teaching techniques, and they want to do new things with technology. And we have new demands for resource optimization. And what that means in English is administration wants to do more computing with less money. So you need to plan strategically to expect complexity, change, and chaos. Planning's not going to solve your issues. It creates a context for figuring out how to solve them. So what we've done at UVic is we have an integrated process. And this is what our planning process looks like. And I want to just start with an overview of the model. We have four layers of planning, and we superimpose on that the Deming model of plan, do, check, fix. What I'm going to do over the next few slides is decompose the model and explain the various steps that we've implemented. And then I'll finish by rebuilding the model. I used to give this presentation and show this slide at the end, and nobody could figure out where I was going. So I just wanted to give you a sense of what the end game is and then rebuild it. All the slides are on the EDUCAUSE site, so it's all there. Any problem in computer science can be solved by adding an additional layer of abstraction. That's a no-brainer, right? It's simple, but each layer of abstraction is harder for the mind to grasp. And planning comes in four layers of abstraction: vision, strategy, operations, and tactics. That's reverse order. And each of these planning layers can be differentiated by a time horizon. So how long are you thinking about? Personal impact. So what does it mean to me? Degree of collaboration. So what does it mean to us? The ease of understanding, so the abstraction concept again, and then stepping stones, so each layer builds on the next. So we work our way from the bottom to the top, from tactics up. Tactics are personal plans. They're short-term, they're standalone, and require very clear action. If you move to operations, these are group plans, plans for your immediate group. There's an annual horizon of about 12 months, and it articulates how well the group will work together. And there's more variable, so it's more complex than a tactical level. If we move to the next level, strategy, this is a family of goals and objectives that brings operational plans into focus for an organizational purpose. So typically 3 to 5 years perspective, it links the operational plans together and requires greater generalization of your thinking. And then the final layer is vision. So where do you want to be when you're finished? So it's a picture of the end result, and it should be the easiest to read and the hardest to write. And what I mean by that is we had this real struggle with writing a vision statement for university systems at UVic. We argued for hours and hours about what we wanted, and we had an epiphany that we just wanted to be the best. And so that led to a vision statement that says that we will be the best university information systems department in Canada. Right? Very simple statement. It took us a long time to get there, but very easy to read. And we're very competitive. So let me start by looking at the plan part of the Deming model. Good governance gives you a forum for strategic planning. Strategic plans are needed so you have parameters for the annual plan. And the annual plan is needed to set boundary conditions for personal performance plans, right? So a very, very linear model there. Let me talk first about governance. So there's some debate about what comes first, strategy or governance. So the key question, in my opinion, in answering this is who makes the decisions about planning? Right? You need a governance process before you can start strategic planning. You need to identify the people and the process for information systems decision making. And you need to engage your key stakeholders, and governance creates the forum for the strategic conversations. So governance needs to come first. Strategic planning becomes a topic of debate for the governance process, and not the first topic. You want to mold and educate your players on the governance team first. They need to understand what they're talking about before you ask them to deal with strategic information systems issues. Planning is the opportunity to debate the most important information systems issue, the future. And we're into the fifth year of our particular governance model, and it's been indispensable in the creation and the sustenance of our strategy. So let me talk about strategy. Strategy discussions focus on the dreams and aspirations of your stakeholders. Your client dreams are your vision, and their aspirations become your goals. Achieving goals requires incremental objectives, and these objectives are the building blocks to achieve the goals. And as building blocks, the objectives can be used to gauge performance. To gauge performance, you need to have metrics. And the metrics need the agreement of your clients. And you develop that agreement through, again, your governance process. So your goals and objectives become the core of your strategic plan. Then you move to the annual plan. These are specific measurable actions in the next year, and they form your annual plan. You need to know where you're going in the immediate term, and the annual plan translates the goals and objectives into specific work plans for the year. And every task in the annual plan is explicitly linked to an objective. And if it isn't, don't do it or change your plan. Okay? And then the final piece is performance plans. So nothing gets done without people. Personal performance plans are really where the rubber meets the road. Leaders are assigned to accomplish each task in the annual plan, and then planned accomplishments form individual personal performance plans. And human resource planning needs to cascade from the leaders in your organization to everybody in your entire organization. Once you have a plan, you need to do it or you need to execute it. And if you look at the left-hand side of the slide here, executing the plans is really your do activity. Decision recommendations are a product of the governance model. The program initiatives are families of projects designed to meet specific program are designed to meet specific strategies, and integrated projects are the result of the annual plans, and they're done with clear strategies in mind. And then assigned tasks are a result of the performance plans. So at the vision level, really, you want to develop a decision-making environment. You want to create a culture around decision-making. If you don't want to do anything different, don't plan. Okay? Planning is all about change, and planning requires decisions, and decisions are what really truly introduce change in an organization. If you want to create a culture of decision-making, or the cult of do, as I like to call it, you have to do that by rewarding the decision makers and giving them positions of influence in your organization. Then we think about the execution. Execution of the strategy requires a program of initiatives. Okay, so strategic planning becomes a reality through a portfolio of projects. And a plan is a series of decisions and of changes. So to make the plan a reality, you need to have a portfolio of projects that are aligned with the institutional strategy. And the alignment, again, comes from the governance input. And projects become your mechanism for executing change. Oh, I'm sorry. You also need to create economic utility, right? So when you're thinking about change, you want to make sure that you have a balanced family of investments. Your future information systems portfolio is your institution's systems investment in the future. It's an investment. And like any portfolio, investments in people and money are based on fundamental economics. So for every project, the quantitative and qualitative benefits need to outweigh the costs and the risks. There has to be a business case there. Let's move on to operations. So operations are really integrating your projects, and integrating is done through sequencing. So you sequence based on return, dependencies, and resources that are available. The specifics of connecting the projects is driven by institutional priorities set out in your strategic plan. And in other words, what gets done and resourced first, second, and third. And that needs to be balanced off by the resources and the capabilities of your functional and technical units that are participating in the projects. And then finally, the tactics piece. This is a systemic project process. Make sure you have a systemic project process that's linked to specific human resource expectations. So you're connecting planning, project management, resource forecasting, and a cult of do so that you get her done. Okay, and then reward is based on accomplishments. So now you need to make sure your execution is aligned. You've planned it, you've started your execution, now you have to find ways to make sure you stay aligned with the strategy. So you're going to check. You're going to check how your vision, strategy, operations, and tactics are progressing. And it's best to work from the bottom up in this case. So on the left-hand side of the slide, you need to understand how personal goals are progressing. You need to understand how they're adding up to deliver on your annual goals and what's the impact of the annual progress on strategic success. And what I want to talk about in this slide are just some things to watch out for. So first of all, plans are absolutely perfect until they start. Okay. And my favorite example of this, and I hate to use another military analogy, but it's the von Schlieffen plan. In 1871, the Germans had defeated France in the Franco-Prussian War, and the German general staff went back to Germany and started planning their next invasion of France. It's kind of a hobby for those guys. But this plan started in 1871, and they took 40 years to write it. It's probably the most detailed plan ever written. And it was brilliant, and they were going to capture France in 39 days. Now, remember, that's without tanks and airplanes. This is in the 1800s, late 1800s and early 1900s. The problem with this brilliant plan was the minute they started the invasion, the plan started to fall apart. Okay. The rigidity of the plan led to failure and led to 4 years of war. The lesson here is that unforeseen complexities are inevitable as soon as you start implementing any plan. Now, at the risk of sounding like Donald Rumsfeld, we know that we don't know everything. So build expectations of the unknown into your plan. Okay. Measure results. Okay, personal, operational, and strategic results. If you don't measure, you can't manage. Now, I know that's a cliche, but it's very true, and I think it's something you have to be mindful of. You need a feedback process to connect and keep abreast of the unexpected. You need metrics to do that. And your metrics should tell a story. So we write a monthly update that we publish to the university every month. And in that report, we have our key achievements in terms of our projects, but we also report on our process metrics. And that can be really boring if you just put a bunch of charts into a report and people see statistics on your help desk. So you need to find a way to tell a story, and the best metrics are the ones that tell a story. My favorite is we had a system that went into production, and over time, what we saw is the number of help desk calls going up, but the amount of time spent on support, calls going down, but the amount of time spent on support going up. So what was really happening is that people were beginning to ask more complex questions of the system, of the support. They were using the system in a more complex way. What that meant to us, and the story was, that they were using it and they were getting value from the system. So metrics can tell a story. You need to report frequently enough to affect timely improvements. So at UVic, we're not invading France, but we review our annual plans quarterly. So every 90 days we get together and review progress on those plans. When we first started the process, we did it midway through the year, and that's a little too late to correct any kind of major problems. So now we do it quarterly. Progress towards goals and objectives always matters. So let your stakeholders know about it. You can brag about these things. It's okay. Being Canadian, we try not to brag, but in this case, we do. And you need to connect to your governance process and link what's been talked about in the governance process with tangible successes. And you need to update your strategy to reflect completed objectives. There's no sense in having a strategy that has old objectives listed in it. On time and on budget is not enough. You need to deliver value. You need to make sure that your clients are getting value from the services and the systems that you deliver to them. So it's not just about on time and on budget. And I'm a PMP, and I know they'll probably kick me out of the club for saying that, but it's very true. Your plan's progress guides future decisions. And that really works well if you have a DeLorean with a flux capacitor. Environment, resources, competition, deadlines, and funding changes will affect your plan. So check means you need to understand how all these factors are influencing your plans. Okay. So let's move on to fix. once you have a good checking process, you need to fix things. Okay. So if we look at the left-hand part of the slide, annually reviewing your strategic plan progress creates the opportunity to fine-tune your strategy. And after you've updated your strategy, there will be resource and schedule impacts that will need updating. And these changes inevitably lead to personal impacts. So the plan needs continual review. It's a long-range planning horizon that you have, so that means there's going to be many changes. Anything can change, including the goals. If it's 3 to 5 years, then, and, you know, entire civilizations have disappeared in that length of time. So you need to make sure external changes and new institutional priorities are dealt with and that you shift your emphasis in your plan and you shift your allocations in your plan to handle that. The strategic plan needs update and social, annual update and socialization. So we meet offsite every year to review our strategic plan and make changes to it. We meet offsite with our management team, and we bring in a lot of folks from within information systems that we think are thought leaders. They might not have a manager or a director title in their job description, but we see them as either upcoming stars or people who could change our thinking. We facilitate it with a faculty member. We started off with the dean of the business school, and he really helped us think about strategic planning in a different way. And we continue to use the business school for these offsite sessions. Progress results are used to determine our benefits realization. So are we actually seeing the benefits that we promised when we first started the plan? The plan gets updated. The new written version is updated annually, and it's submitted to the VP and the executive and the governance process for formal approval. We also do zero-based annual planning. And what I mean by that is we start from scratch each year. We write an annual plan with a blank sheet of paper, so we don't cut and paste what we did last year. We build a report card on what we did in the previous year's annual plan, and then we start with a green field, clean sheet of paper, and start the annual planning afresh. We think about new priorities. We think about realigning our resources. We think about changes to project schedules that cross multiple years, and we think about our portfolio changes. And the new annual plan creates new capital and new operating budgets. Okay, so new requests for the university for money, which recently haven't always been all that well accepted, but nonetheless, it's an opportunity for us to talk about the things we could do, and if we had the money, what would we do with it? And then finally, shifting priorities and funds will create new personal performance plans, so it impacts folks on a personal level. So I bring it all together into a single picture. We have plan, do, check, and fix, superimposed, So we have our four planning layers, and then we have plan, do, check, and fix superimposed on that. So we have a continuous improvement process. We start with planning, which is linked to implementation. The implementation is measured, performance is assessed, and the planning process is improved. Okay. So it looks sequential, it looks formulaic, but the real world's messy, and certainly we don't follow all these steps in perfect sequence. We kind of jump a few occasionally. Sometimes there's some overlap. We will perform tasks out of sequence to deal with emerging issues. But despite these challenges, having a well-constituted process helps, it creates a reference point for us, so we know where we want to be. A planning process allows you to rise above the day-to-day chaos. It allows you to think strategically and develop a picture of where you want to be. Now, we're not completely here at UVic, but because we have a roadmap of what the final process will look like, we know where we're going, and we get better at it every year. I want to take just a break for a moment, and before I move on to the next section, are there any questions or thoughts or ideas or challenges? I hope I haven't been too boring. Yeah.
As you said, you start fresh each year.
Yeah.
What horizon are you planning for?
So that's the annual plan. So we start with a pure blank sheet of paper for the annual plan. The strategic plan, though, what we do annually is update that. So we go off-site in May. We update the strategic plan. And then over the summer, we start to build our annual plan based on the strategy. Yeah.
So based on this morning's keynote about where strategy originates from in your organization. So you talk about governance and the deciders. Who is that, do you think?
Yeah. I felt kind of embarrassed when he was talking today. You know, we do fall into that trap. What we do try and do, though, is bring in, like I said, some of the up and comers in our organization that have new ideas and that tell me I'm stupid sometimes. that's okay, right? And we try and create a context where people feel comfortable to say what they really think. And so we bring them into the room, and they're part of the planning process. And we change them up. The other thing is that I don't think I have a director that reports to me that's over 30. All my direct reports have been promoted from within the ranks at the university, and almost all of them are graduates of our university. We have a really unusual culture there, and it's just worked really well for us to grow from within. So a lot of people really strongly believe in the institution and want to see it succeed. And so that's one of our ways of getting around some of the problems that Mr. Hamill talked about this morning. Yeah.
Does effective IS planning require effective institutional strategic planning? And if so, how do you integrate it?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. We're lucky at UVic. We have an excellent strategic plan for the university, and that's been refreshed every 5 years, and the president really strongly believes in strategic planning. In institutions where that isn't the case, I would argue that there is a strategy. It's just not written down. So senior folks do have in their mind what the strategy is. They just haven't gone to the trouble of writing it down. And I'm going to talk a little bit later about specifically linking goals, the goals of your institution the goals of your information systems strategy to the university, the institution plan.
What metrics do you use to check with the students to gauge the success of these projects that you take on?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
not a good one. We just instituted our first customer service survey, and we got good results. We used to have a meeting where we would bring students in to talk about systems, and it's really hard to get students there. We even offered food. Next time I'm going to offer free beer. But it's really, even though they don't come too often or we don't get too many of them, even just a little feedback really helps. The other interesting feedback we get is from parents of students who are at the university, who actually work at the university, and we get lots of secondhand feedback, like, I can't believe you used to have a mainframe registration system, right? That really, I guess another place is Facebook. So we went live with a portal. And then suddenly there was 10,000 students against our portal as a group on Facebook, and we read the comments, we responded to some, and we're just launching a brand new portal in November because of those comments, and we did an information architecture for the portal based completely on student comments. Yeah.
Following that, do you have any kind of system for faculty satisfaction?
You listen to your faculty? No, just kidding. We have a governance process that has four deans who attend every monthly meeting of our strategic council. So we have really good engagement from the deans, and that takes a lot of work. That's a lot of building of personal relationships between myself and those folks to get them in the room. We go out of our way to talk to them. We look for any excuse to talk to faculty and get them engaged. So we do have a lot of mechanisms in place, but that's a talk for another day. There's a whole governance model we've got in place that works really, really well. You already asked a question. Okay. Well, their hair falls out. I haven't had to face that. We've had some folks who were more senior folks at the university who when I got there, were just really close to retirement. So just kind of lucky that way that we had a retiring group, and then I was just allowed to, I had the opportunity to promote really young folks into positions of influence. And it wasn't any kind of Machiavellian play to get people out. I'm going to move on to the rest of the presentation now, if you're okay with that. I saw some bored looks and some people were leaving, so I thought I'd break it up a little bit. So let's talk about thinking strategically. So these are just some things to think about when you create the content for your strategic plan. So where do you get ideas for your plan? Okay. First thing is layering technologies. old technologies never seem to go away. Fax machines still exist. I can't believe they still exist. We have instant messaging, we have email, we have texting, we have a lot of things. But I can't even get the fax machine out of our house. My wife won't let me get rid of our fax machine. The problem is that new technologies are seldom a 100% replacement for old ones. So we end up building layers of technologies, and we have this evolutionary development of systems. Dependencies on the old remain embedded in the new. So we build new technologies, and we try and leverage the old ones. Right? But that means the old ones never go away. It's a shortcut. I mean, this type of thinking is a shortcut. Sometimes it's lower cost. It's less risk. But if you start at the top of the pyramid and think about an online credit card web-based application, it's still going to have to go through a lot of these layers to get down to some old COBOL batch code that still sits in the banking system. I think part of the problem is that we just get lazy, right? We look for easy ways out, and we just build on top rather than actually completely replace anything. The value to your client reverses the pyramid, okay? It's the new layers that help your clients achieve their system's dreams and aspirations, okay? So you have to lose the old layers to make room for the new. So how do you do that? What we do at UVic is that we've developed an active strategy for replacing them. And what we say is when someone comes along and says, I don't have enough resources to do this new project. Does anybody else heard that? I don't have enough resources to do something. So I always ask them, so what are you going to stop doing? Okay. What work are you going to stop doing so that we can do this new thing that will really add value for our clients? Okay. So I'm going to move beyond the notion of layers for a minute. What's the next new technology? We see new ones touted daily. We go to the exhibit hall and we see all kinds of new technologies. How do you distinguish and how do you pick winners? The only guarantee that I know over a 3 to 5 year horizon is that there's going to be some new disruptive technology that's going to derail your plans. Guaranteed to happen. A self-improving planning process is the only way to adapt to these inevitable changes. I have my favorite phrase, early to beta, late to production. How do you sort out bad new technology from good new technology? So Apple came out with the Newton in 1992. It was brilliant. It was ahead of its time, and it was unusable. Right? Fast forward to 2007, and a whole bunch of us, a lot of folks have the iPhone now. It's the son of Newton. Right? Information systems departments in a university don't have that luxury of time. What we put into production has to work. So we don't have 15 years to keep noodling with this technology to see if we can get it right. It has to work when we go live. However, if you're going to plan for the future, you need to think about and test and experiment with new technologies, and you need to be able to assess the risk. So my example at UVic is SharePoint. We spent a lot of time understanding what SharePoint would mean to the institution. We piloted it. We experimented with it. And it was like pulling back an elastic. We weren't ready to go live with it. But we kept pulling the elastic back and understanding it more. And when we really understood it, we went live and we let go of the elastic. It was a huge success. Within 4 months, we had 865 independent SharePoint sites on campus. But we'd really planned it out carefully before we went live. You have to think about risk for an information systems department as a balanced portfolio. You need to encourage as much testing with new technology as possible, but you need to be rigorous about what you move to production. In a university environment, it's okay not to be leading edge. I might get shot by some people by saying that. But I don't think you're doing your students, your faculty, and your staff a favor by taking unnecessary risks. Hence the phrase, early to beta, learn about it, but late to production. Pioneers can have arrows in their backs, so sometimes it's good to wait. Let's think about a consequences matrix when we talk about risk. I mean, this is very simple, it's not rocket science, it just maps risk versus return. And I'd like to work through an example of open source on this. What I'm going to try and get at is that you need to take progressive chances based on experience. And the question I would pose is all open source good? So strategically, are you going to move your organization to open source for everything? I think you need to consider a balanced approach when you answer these questions. And let's start with the low-risk, high-return quadrant. So in this quadrant, we thought about open-source server operating systems. So this was really a no-brainer. We put Linux in. It works really well. I would view Linux as a commodity product. And the consequences were okay. Low-risk, high-return. So it was a good news story. So we were getting more comfortable with open source. So we decided to look at a high-risk, high-return category. So in this category, we were worried about our learning management system. So we thought, let's look at open source. We knew we had to change. We had a proprietary learning management system. Our customers were pushing for innovation and improvement. So we took a calculated risk with Moodle. We implemented a pilot with 15 courses. Within 1 year, that skyrocketed to 300 courses. Within 3 years, we now have 1,000 courses on Moodle. And the most important thing is that the Senate Committee on Teaching and Learning has formally approved Moodle as our single learning management system on campus. So for the first time ever, we have formal approval to move to a single learning management system. So open source was a huge success here, right? It was high risk, but we got a huge return on it. So very successful, and we're very pleased with that. So we had good experiences with open source in both these areas. But should these experiences force us to use open source everywhere else just for the sake of doing open source? So we took the notion of open source to our clients and said, what if we replaced Microsoft Office with open source? And we got a resounding no. We don't want to do that. We want to keep Microsoft Office. And they also came back and they said to us, and by the way, we don't like your open source email system. We want to replace it. And so we brought in Exchange. So we kind of reversed the trend in this particular quadrant. And then if you move up to low risk and high return, we thought about what would fit in this category would be an open source ERP system. Now, we've just implemented Banner. It's working quite well, so there's no need to install a new system for our ERP. However, from an open source perspective, we need more competitors in this market space. For an institution our size, there aren't too many ERP vendors. So we strongly support the open source initiative. We strongly believe that quality is a great opportunity for higher ed. So if you look at the full picture, the message here is don't rush headlong into open source simply for the sake of following the pack. There are some sources of input to the planning process you need to think about. Who do you trust? Professional forecasters, I think, have an easy job. They're not held accountable for their predictions. And vendors have a vested interest. So my rule here is never trust a futurist and never trust a vendor. When you're developing a plan, you need to blend accountability with perspective. Use people who work with the technology, who have accountability for the results. And you need to rise above the day-to-day issue, so I strongly encourage you to bring a facilitator in, hopefully someone from within your institution who also has skin in the game. The other thing is learn from research. We have about $100 million in research on our campus, and we like to learn from the technology there. We have there most of the research technology in our data center, and so we're able to learn from it. I just caution you, in some of the lessons don't always apply directly. We used a storage area network for our research computers in a Linux environment. We tried to translate that into our administrative environment, and it didn't work because we had a heterogeneous operating system environment, and the SAN failed miserably. But the key point is you can learn a lot from the research side. I'm going to wrap up by talking about some experiences we've had in producing our strategic plan. I call it working strategically. The first thing you need to think about are some key questions. And these are questions I like to use in any planning session. First, how do we leverage our existing assets? How do you grow capacity? How do you get the maximum value of your current systems investments? And how do you get value from things you already have? The second question is, what prototypes should we be experimenting with? You need to encourage experimentation for potential future projects. How do we socialize everything we do? So you need to get into the organizational bloodstream. You need to understand how you can create communities of interest to share experiences with our systems across campus. Always ask, what did we miss? What did we forget? Nobody's perfect, and it never hurts to ask this question one more time. How do we get better? So you never stop asking this question. Everything can be continuously improved. Are we enjoying the journey? So you're not going to have any good staff if they're not enjoying the journey, and you have to keep moving the bar higher. Are we following our customers' priorities? So you need to fulfill the dreams and aspirations of your customers. Their priorities drive our schedules and our resource allocations. And finally, what can we stop doing? Identify the things we can turn off or shut down, and that frees up resources to do the new stuff. So goals are your primary point of connection with the institutional strategy. They're your link to the strategic plan of the university. Strategic goals are choices. It's not a strategic goal if it doesn't force you to make a choice. Otherwise, the strategy is just platitudes. It's just motherhood and apple pie. Choices set direction, and they're a fork in the road. So we've chosen to be a client-driven organization, not a technocentric organization. Goals are intended to last 3 to 5 years, so it's not something you undertake lightly. Objectives are used to achieve your goal, and if a goal takes 5 years to achieve, then you need shorter-term objectives. So they're building blocks towards achieving your goal. Your objectives need to be concrete, they need to be specific, they're mutually independent, and they have to have tangible deliverables. And the mathematician in me couldn't help but put the last bullet up here. Your goal equals the sum of your objectives. Okay? Any plan is better than no plan, and simply reacting is a high-risk survival strategy. Information systems are a large university asset, and unplanned risk is unacceptable. Prudent asset management requires planning. It may be not as sexy as competitive advantage or enrollment management, and it needs to be connected to these ideas, but real-world pragmatism is key. A good plan explains your investment strategy. Okay, so where are you going to spend future money and allocate your expected resources? A good plan is a good way to get more resources allocated to information systems because you create trust when people know where you're going and you follow up on your commitments.
You can find more EDUCAUSE podcasts by visiting our podcast page at www.educause.edu/podcasts or search for EDUCAUSE on iTunes. EDUCAUSE podcasts are now available to listen to straight from your mobile device. Just visit www.educause.edu/mobile. I'm Jerry Bain. Thanks for listening.